Welcome, everybody. Tonight's class, Parshas Vayetze. The title of class is, Are You a Good Secret Keeper? So we're going to start it off with a clip from The Office with Michael Scott. Here we go. They say, let us go to the videotape.
Told Michael about some feelings I used to have for Pam. I had just broken up with Katie and had a couple of drinks, and I confided in the world's worst confidant.
Okay.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, gym bag.
Remember that thing I told you on the booze cruise about Pam? That was personal. So if we could just keep that between you and me, that would be great.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Who else knows?
Nobody.
Wow. Jim and I are great friends. We hang out a ton, mostly at work. But the fact that he told me his secret and no one else says everything about our friendship. And it is why I intend on keeping that secret for as long as I possibly can.
My lips are sealed.
My lips are sealed.
Bangles.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Can you hear me? They talk about us, telling lies. Hey, what you getting?
I'm going with grape.
Ah, good stuff, good stuff. See the game last night?
Which game?
Any of them. So, what's 411? Any updates on the PA situation?
I don't know any.
P-A-M? P-A?
Okay.
No, it's okay, we're talking code.
What is?
Listen, Stan, you know, how long does it take you to pick out a soda?
I'm going to take off, actually.
All right, yeah. Well, cool. Psilocybin? Hmm? Peach iced tea. You're going to hate it. It's grape soda.
Tony the Tiger.
Yeah.
You don't hear that much anymore.
Not so much.
Okay, what is going on here?
Nothing.
Oh, really? Nothing? Fact, you are drinking grape soda. You never drink grape soda. Fact, you are talking to Jim. You never talk to Jim.
Fact, I love grape soda. I always have. Fact, Jim and I talk all the time. We tell each other secrets.
Okay, so what is the secret, Michael?
I had asked Michael if I could head up the Oscar investigation, and he said that only Dwight was capable of handling such sensitive material.
Is that true?
I don't know. Yeah, it is.
Thank you, Michael. I know you're telling the truth.
Okay.
I can tell. I won't let you down.
Good.
Thanks.
Expense this.
Michael, is that a wig?
No. I wear it like that sometimes.
Is that a wig?
This is from Hooters.
Yeah, it's a business lunch.
Did Toby approve this?
No, he did not. I don't need his permission.
You just got your corporate credit card back. Do you really want me to take it away again?
It's ridiculous. They took my card away because I spent $80 at a magic shop. What they don't understand is that I bought the stuff to impress potential clients. So business related, right? I put a cigarette through a freaking quarter. And you know what, Toby? They almost bought from us.
I'm not processing this.
Look, Jim needed a relaxing lunch. He has been depressed, and it has been affecting his productivity. How is that not work-related?
He seems fine to me.
You're not his friend. You don't know. He is in love with a girl he works with who's engaged, so just cut me some slack, please.
Pam?
All right. Okay.
That show still holds up.
I'm telling you, the Office is a show that is a gift that keeps on giving. Okay, but okay, so let's get to the okay. So, why did Jim feel the need to share his secret that he was feeling for Pam with Michael on the "quote unquote" booze cruise?
He had to tell someone.
Why? Why do you have to tell anybody?
Two reasons, probably. Number one is that it weighed on him. Number two, he probably wanted to be in the in crowd, so to speak. That requires social currency. Gossip is arguably one of the best forms of social currency.
Forrest, excellent 2 points. In other words, when you sometimes a person has some a intimate thought or feeling. There's a, you get a release, a cathartic release by sharing that. So the fact that, again, also if he's on the booze cruise, he had a L'chaim or two. So, Jessica, you want to add to that? Your thought?
Yeah, he had mentioned he was drinking, so he was uninhibited to begin with. And I think, like, you know, it was torturing him inside, so he wanted to be able to share it with somebody. If he couldn't share it with Pam.
No, that would not go well. Correct. So, yeah. So there's if a person, at least he got some sort of expression and it was weighing on him, as Boris and Jessica both said, and he got a sense of cathartic release. But he knew once he said it, he had made a terrible mistake. And the scene, the clip that I shared, starts off where he's actually going into the office there and telling him Michael not to share it. And once he says, "I will keep it a secret as long as I can." Already you know. It's okay.
Yeah, he barely made it past lunch.
Right. Okay. So question number two is, why does Michael love the fact that Jim has entrusted a secret with him? He loves that. That's like he's over the moon that Jim has shared a secret. What is the idea of that? Why does a person love that person shares a secret with them?
Because you don't share secrets with people you don't like or trust.
And therefore,
he must like. Well, he feels like he made a friend, I guess, and he doesn't seem like the type of person who has a lot of them.
Correct. So the character Michael Scott in the Office is a person who, being that he is, socially off, suffers from a profound case of unawareness. And, you know,
he has no emotional intelligence,
zero emotional intelligence, you know, and specifically within the social emotional intelligence has no sense of his own self. So he may be able to pick up. He can't pick up other cues, and he can't pick up cues about himself.
But it's a sense of power over people because he knows something that other people don't.
Correct. So it's
a power.
Right. So there's a couple pieces to this. And number one, he feels like, as Boris pointed out, I'm a trusted friend. As he said, then he starts, you know, the pseudo documentary camp pointed. Yeah, Jim and I are good friends. We hang out all, you know, we hang out all the time, mostly at work. That's a great line. And, he's enthralled by it. And again, the fact that he has that power of the secret of something which is, especially a romantic secret that's even more salacious and more appealing is just he's just overwhelmed because it's an element of power and he has a beloved friend. Now, of course, is, okay, why is Michael unable to keep the secret? And this is and we're going to go obviously universalize this. Why can't he keep the secret? He was told this is a secret. The situation is that Pam, just to give you the background narrative, Pam, who is the receptionist in the office, is currently engaged to someone else. Jim has feelings for her. Obviously, that would not be well received and be weird. Okay. So why didn't Michael realize? Why did he have to?
He's not used to being given such, privileged information.
Okay.
It just kind of like slipped up.
Okay. So okay, there's two things. So
I also think it's to hold it over people, because he's like, he's in the know and the other people aren't.
Right. So they've actually done, psychologists.
Well, he lost that holdover almost immediately.
Correct. Right. Well, the secret's out that he didn't even last one day. So the psychologists have studied this particular phenomena of the ability to keep secrets. First of all, there's, as Scott pointed out, it's actually difficult because it requires a further element of processing. In other words, you got to think about this information can be shared, this information cannot be shared, and you have to do the mental process of just, you know, deleting or keeping that information out. So number one, it's not easy to do. Especially if you talk a lot, and this guy talks a lot in the office. He's just going, you know, he's like not doing any work. He's just hocking everybody up. That's number one. Two is he got emotional, like he's trying to justify because he's got the people there, the accountants are not allowing him to process his dubious expensing of a $80 lunch at Hooters. Shocking they didn't we're gonna let that one fly. Whatever. So Michael got like excited, and then he blurted out the secret, you know, or not openly, but he said, you know, but he had to, you know, since he was feeling attacked and been shown to be he had to prove, they were saying, you're not really his friend, and he's fine. Oh, he's having a hard time. You don't really know. And then he says to justify himself why he was acting as a true counselor to help him out by taking him to the place. One little pressure point about him. He of course threw Jim under the bus by sharing about the fact that he has feelings toward an engaged woman in the office. Now what? Harm, as you can imagine, what harm was this going to cause Jim?
I mean, it could be physical because Pam is currently engaged, and her fiance also works at the same company. So
this is going to be
extremely embarrassing too. Like the whole office would know.
Right, the whole office is going to know because that secret is going out there because it was said in front of five people. That information is going to be, everybody's going to know about that in 6 minutes. Number one, that cannot be held out, covered up. And basically, they're going to he's going to be humiliated in his workplace. And the fiance may, shall we say, might not like that, and as such, be aggressive. So what I'm bringing this up is that. This is just a very humorous example, but the truth is, you know, the famous line is, if you want something to remain secret, do not tell anybody, because people are notorious to not able to keep secrets. It's because, first of all, psychologically, it's very hard because A, from the process standpoint, B, from a person who wants, as mentioned earlier, Boris pointed out, person gets ego gratification that I have this social currency. I'm the guy in the know. I'm entertaining. I got inside information. I can entertain you with cool stuff. And of course it turns into, it's also a power thing. You know, it gives you exclusivity. You want to hear people, it gives you a shine. So all those factors make it very difficult for people to be careful in keeping secrets. Now, with this introduction, we can go into we'll go into two episodes, one at the tippy end of the parsha of last week, and then the beginning of this week's parsha. So let's go to the so let me do a share screen here. Okay. Everybody see the screen? Okay. Alan, do you want to read?
Sure. Esau harbored hatred against Yaakov for the blessings which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to him, the days of mourning of my father draw near. then I will kill my brother Yaakov. The words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rivka, and she sent and called for Yaakov, her younger son, and said to him, behold, your brother Esau consoles himself with the thoughts to kill you. And now, my son, listen to me and rise, flee to my brother Laban, to Haran.
Haran, stay, yeah.
Stay with him for some time until your brother's fury subsides, until your brother's anger against you subsides, and he forgets what you did to him. And I will send and fetch you from there. Why should I lose both of you in one day? Rivka said to Yitzchak. I loathe my life because of the Hittite woman. If Yaakov takes a wife from one of the Hittite women, such as these, from the women of the land, what reason have I for life? Yitzchak called Yaakov and blessed him. He commanded him and said to him, do not take a wife from the woman of Canaan. Rise and go to Padan Aram, to the house of Betuel, your mother's father, and take from there a wife for yourself from the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother.
Okay. So here's just to summarize. After Esau got cheated out of the blessing, he was enraged and he said, all right, when my dad dies, I'm going to kill my brother Yaakov. Apparently, this information got out to Rivka. Rivka knew this. She called Yaakov and said, look, your brother wants to kill you. I want you to go to my brother Lovin's house and hang out there. Now, did she say this to her husband Yitzchak?
No.
What did she tell him?
She told him about the wife, about him not taking a wife.
Earlier in the story, it says that the fact that Esau had married two Hittite women who were doing idolatry was a tremendous source of aggravation for the couple, for Yitzchak and Rivka. And now she's saying, I don't want to marry one of these women. If he brings home one of these women, she said to him, what reason have I life? I'll be devastated. Okay. Now, So then Yitzchak tells Yaakov, go to Padan Aram, find a wife from basically your mom's family. Now, question. So why did she, now, does she believe, does she want Yaakov to marry one of the Canaanite women, the Hittite women? Is that
no.
as well?
We hang out a ton.
No, because she
speaks. He told me his secret and no one else says everything about her.
Sorry.
So,
she saw what the woman that Esau married did to him and, you know, didn't keep him kind of following, you know, Hashem and doing tshuva. So she didn't want that for her son. So it's not like it was a misdirection. It was truth as well.
It was true. Okay, good. So Alma, it is true as well. But why didn't Rivka come into Yitzchak's office or room and say, hey, Yitzchak, Esau is so angry about what happened today, that about the whole situation with the brachos, with the blessings, that he wants to kill Yaakov.
And because Yitzchak would have sided probably with Esau, because Yitzchak loved his son as well, his other son, Esau and Yaakov, and didn't see the difference between really the two.
Well, it's interesting if we go back to the couple of verses earlier, when Yitzchak realized that he had been duped, that Yaakov came in there and masqueraded as Esau, and he realized what went down, he said, Gam Baruch Tiyeh, he should be blessed. He didn't say, no, these blessings should not apply to Yaakov. He validated, because basically he realized that his appreciation or understanding of the dynamic between Esav and Yaakov was incorrect. So he, and also right after this, it says he gives him the blessing. He gives him the blessing of Abraham. So he did not, in other words, if he felt that Esav is the good guy and Yaakov is the wicked guy, he should have said, "You, since you did this, you don't get any blessings, and I'll give blessing to Esav, number one." And B, right when he sends them back to Laban's, the next verse is that he blesses them with the blessing of Avram. He basically becomes the family leader. So he does not reject Yaakov. But Rivka doesn't say this to, I guess, what other possibility? Why didn't Rivka want to share this with Yitzchak, that Esav wants to kill Yaakov and it's a credible threat?
Yitzchak may not believe her. I think much earlier on, it says that Esav is Yitzchak's favorite and Yaakov is Rivka's favorite. And because of that, Yitzchak may not see it or see this in Esav and only thinks the best of him and does not believe that one son would want to kill the other son, along with them being brothers. And I say, like, oh, they're brothers. He's just saying this in jest or saying this because they're not getting along at the moment.
Correct. For both. So, Shayna, I think that's a little bit what you were getting to. Also, in other words, A, since there is some favoritism, since Yitzchak has some love toward Esav, he's not going to believe it. And rather, when she comes in there, he will say to her, "Oh, come on. Obviously, he's upset right now. He's not going to really kill Yaakov." You know what I mean? She would basically discount her point. Jessica.
I guess kind of to add to it, wasn't she given a prophecy while she was pregnant about the nature of the twins? So she also kept that a secret the whole time.
She did. Okay. That's an excellent question. So there's a lot of secrets going on here. So, and in contrast to Michael Scott, Rivka is actually a pretty good secret keeper. There's another factor here, is that as Alan pointed out, did she want Yaakov to marry somebody from her family and not one of the Hittite women? Is that also true?
Yes,
it is true. The point of the matter is, if there's information that is not going to make a difference and only hurt somebody, you don't share it with them. You know what I'm saying? In other words, what does Rivka want? Rivka want to accomplish? She wants Yaakov to go up to basically, modern day Lebanon, Syria, to her family's house, and hang out there while Esav calms down. Okay. That's her goal. So there's no point to say that there's going to be a fratricide with Esav killing Yaakov after Yitzchak passes away. There's no point. This is going to make, he's not either A, as I said, not going to believe it, or B, it's going to make him terribly upset about the situation of his family. She can accomplish her goal by saying, "No, I would like Yaakov to go to my house and marry somebody from our general larger family, because I don't want them to marry one of these Hittite women who did idolatry in our own house." You know what I'm saying? This takes a lot of so in a certain sense, is this, in what way is this better than lying? The Torah teaches later, midvar shekar tirchak, we should try to stay away from lying. Not that we don't never lie, but you have to lie. You need a sort of a heter, you need a dispensation to lie, right? What is the number one dispensation to lie? Jessica, would you happen to know that one? I know that you may not ask the question, but...
Save a life.
What other reason could you lie? So she's lying to save Yaakov. Good. What other reason? I'm going to get to Jessica.
To prevent further conflicts?
To prevent further conflicts. And the term we use is called, mipnei shalom, for peace. P peace in the home, peace between people, or another way people heard the phrase, shalom bias. You have a question, Jessica.
Oh, I was just going to say, in some ways, she was trying to not confront or create more problems between like her son and her children. So that was maybe the easiest route in terms of avoidance.
Correct. Now, this is the question, which is very, what is so difficult? What was so difficult about Rivka concealing the truth from Yitzchak? Why is that really was not easy for her? Or we can imagine not easy for her. And which I'll put into question number five, what would most spouses have done in Rivka's situation?
I would say what was so difficult for her was keeping this from her husband.
Yes. Explain.
Spouses usually tell each other everything. Sorry, trying to occupy a puppy here. Spouses usually tell each other everything and trying, especially when it comes to matters of the family, and not being able to tell Yitzchak everything that's going on with his children is also probably going to cause some inner turmoil for Rivka.
Yes. Excellent. The natural, if you're a mom and you found out that your older son wants to kill your younger son, that is traumatic. And you'd want to get the support from her husband Yitzchak about the situation. So she'd want to share it with him. She knows she wants to get some support and catharsis from it. But she realized that would be a bad situation. And yes, she has to give up on that because it would be cause more, it will not help, but rather be a harm. So that's really amazing from Rivka what she does. Okay, now you get to that scenario.
Rabbi, yeah. If I may interject, interestingly, in the Chafetz Chaim Shmirat HaLashon, he specifically says that if you have heard a rumor or have gossip, you are not allowed to share that with your spouse either.
Correct. Right. You're just, there's no heter of, well, since we're a spouse, we can talk Lashon Hara to each other. Right. Sharing negative information about a fellow Jew is prohibited unless there is a, what they call a toelus, a specific purpose. And that's something which is a whole study in and of itself. Okay, let's get to our story in the Parsha. Boris, can you read the screen?
I can, yes.
We hear you perfectly. You got yourself a good mic. So this is our this week's Parsha. Take it up from verse 18.
Yaakov loved Rachel, and he said, I will work for you for 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. Laban said, or Laban said, better that I give her to you than I give her to another man. Stay with me. Yaakov worked for Rachel for 7 years, and they seemed to like him just a few days in his love of her. Yaakov said to Laban, give me my wife because my time is complete and let me come to her. Laban gathered all the people of the place and made a feast. In the evening, he took his daughter, Leah, and brought her to him, and he came to her. Laban gave his maidservant, Zilpah, to his daughter, Leah, as a maidservant. In the morning, behold, she was Leah. He said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? What was it not for Rachel that I worked with you? Why have you tricked me? Laban said, such is not done in our place, to give the younger before the older. Complete the week of this one, and this one too will be given to you for the work that you will do for me for yet another 7 years.
Okay. So this is of course the amazing trickery that Yaakov Lavan has two daughters. The older one is Leah, the younger one is Rachel, and he loves Rachel, and he goes to Lavan and says, hey, Lavan, I'd like to get married to your daughter, Rachel, and I'll work for you for 7 years, give you 7 years of labor. And Lavan's good with that. Wedding night, and then a big party. They didn't obviously have a chuppah, obviously, because you'd be able to see that. Everybody's having a big feast. And he brings Leia in. And on the shot level, he doesn't discover her identity until the morning. And as the verse says, and in the morning, behold, it was Leia. Now, why didn't Yaakov at that point in time turn to complain to Leia? What's going on here? You're not Rachel. Now, there's no evidence from the text that Rachel or Leah knew about the deal that Lavan, their father, had made with Yaakov. But he doesn't say anything he doesn't confront Leah. He goes right to Lavan. I mean, why not, Chloe?
I think twofold. First of all, Lavan's the one who decided who would get married, and it was pretty clear to Yaakov that Lavan was the decider as a father, and as a trickster. But also, he wouldn't want to embarrass Leia because she's just a bride, and she obviously wanted to do this. So why would he embarrass her unnecessarily?
Right, So as a question number seven, what would most people have done? I mean, most people would have gone crazy. He would have, if this happened to a regular guy, he would complain to the woman, and he would complain to Lavan, and he would go talking to everybody in the entire town how terrible Lavan is, and he set me up, and he tricked me into marrying somebody I don't want to marry. You know what I'm saying? And it's interesting is also, why didn't Yaakov divorce Leia? You know, Leia, well, it's not your fault, but I wanted to marry your sister. You know, nothing personal, but I love your sister and I don't love you. Okay. So he didn't go in that direction, Yaakov. So I think what Chloe brought up is a couple of important points. Number one, he clearly recognized, he didn't know that his uncle, this is his uncle. He didn't realize till that night that his uncle was a con man, trickster guy, number one. Once he realized that, basically, who's pulling all the strings? It's Lavan. He realized quickly, as Chloe pointed out, that Leia is just as much as a victim as he is. So why is he going to make her feel bad and she's a poor victim here. And then, so he goes to contend with Lavan. Now you see here, and he also, he didn't want, you know, he didn't tell her any about what went down. He concealed that information. So you see from two people here, from Rivka dealing with her husband, Yitzchak, did not act like Michael Scott, did not share confidence, did not share the information. And two, Yaakov never revealed from the plain shot, there's a famous midrash I'm not going to go into right now, but did not reveal to Leia that she was not the first choice. Okay? And he made a quick decision that basically, since he wanted Rachel, if he's going to ask for a divorce, it's going to make Lavan crazy. Because basically, what can happen to a woman who's a divorced woman in that ancient times? I mean, basically, she's going to be totally messed over. So, it says that he also loves her as well, but it was rough. So you have another question or comment?
No, sorry, I didn't lower the hand.
Does it mention ever what Rachel thought? I mean, she must have been surprised or hurt or shocked.
So it seems because there's a later encounter when Yaakov is living with his two wives and their two maidservants. And Yaakov and Leah has a son named Reuven. And he goes bringing out these thing called mandrakes, which in the ancient world were viewed as some sort of fertility property. And Rachel asks, "Hey, can I have some of your son's mandrakes?" And she and he's and Leah says to him, "Oh, you want to? And you know, isn't it enough that you stole my husband?" Because she knows that Rachel is the more favored one, and she doesn't understand what's going on here because she was married first, and Rachel's like the you know. So clearly, they both don't know what the deal was. So the fact the story works, and they didn't know about the whole deal. You know, this is a time where that the dad did all the dealing, and then they just have to go through with it. Chloe.
This may be a midrash, and if so, then I know you don't love the midrash. But isn't there something?
Chloe, I love the midrash, but I keep it separate, like the milchiks and the fleishiks from the show.
Isn't there a midrash about how there was like a secret code
between
Yaakov and Rachel that she was supposed to tell him under the chuppah or for him to recognize her? And when Rachel saw that they were going to, you know, replace her with Leah, she didn't want Leah to be embarrassed, and she gave her that code.
Yes, that midrash is in the it's brought down by Rashi, and that midrash is actually quoted in the Talmud. So if you have a midrash in the Talmud, it's like it's the next even more significant. It's called the Nagarata, not even in the body of work called the Midrashim. It's a Nagarata, and yes, just you're going to hear about that. The Midrash says that basically Rachel and Leah knew about the situation, and they had a whole sign, Rachel made a system of signals because they anticipated getting ripped off by Lavan. That Rachel would indicate to Yaakov, and Rachel gave these things to her sister so she would not get embarrassed. Now, that itself is a challenging midrash because you can't, why, just because you don't want your sister to get embarrassed, should Yaakov be tricked into marrying somebody he doesn't want to marry? You know what I'm saying? So the midrash itself comes with a whole host of problems. And B, it doesn't work out with the pshat because clearly the rest of the story seems to be they're acting as if nobody knows about this. And if he did know about it, then he should be yelling at also Rachel. What happened? How come you should have a completely different narrative. So what that medrash means is, I'll tell you the truth, I don't really, it's a hard medrash. I don't have a good understanding of that. But it's a very famous one. Okay. So I want to keep on going here because we're running out of time. Okay, so there's a related idea very close. There's a verse in Proverbs. The Hebrew is Mishle, chapter 11, verse 13. Holech Rachel Magalaso v'neman ruach b'chasadaver. One who brings gossip reveals a secret, but one who is a trustworthy spirit keeps a secret. My question is, why does a gossiper reveal secrets? And what satisfactions does it provide? We mentioned a little earlier, but so this is an understanding of the pasuk. Why do gossip people who share stories tend to reveal secrets?
Is it possible that it's because they're not even revealing their secrets themselves so much as they are secrets about themselves? And that the trustworthy spirit in question who keeps the secret is the one who keeps the gossip's status as a gossip, or the gossiper's status as a gossiper secret?
Or so each part of the verse is talking about two different kind of guys. You have the gossiper, and then you have the trustworthy guy. The gossiper, who's sharing stories, tells secrets. The trustworthy guy keeps a secret. But the question is, why does a gossiper who's telling stories, why can you be a gossiper and not tell secrets? Why is that? Why does one come with the other? Why does King Solomon, who wrote the Book of Proverbs, why is a gossiper? It's like assume they're a secret teller. Why is that true? You have to appreciate something about gossip itself.
A gossiper, somebody who reveals information about other people, and the more interesting the information, the better they feel the information they're revealing, and so secrets would be the most interesting information they could reveal?
That's exactly correct. In other words, a secret elevates a regular story to a whole new level of excitement and interest. The gossiper is getting enhanced social status by being the person in the know. You want to know the scoop? Speak to this guy. This guy knows what's going down. You know what I'm saying? Speak to Jeff. He knows the scoop. He knows, even when people say, he knows all the dirt. You know, there's that guy. He knows all the dirt, right? So when you share a secret in a story, it's not only the steak, it's the sizzle. I mean, you're really bringing it. So therefore, it gives your profile as somebody who's interesting to listen to all so much more. So the guy can't control, because why would you want to give a boring story when he can have an amazing story? And what's better? What's the most amazing thing? A secret. So the reverse is the Neman Ruach, the trustworthy spirit person. They suppress. They make sure secrets don't go out. In fact, let's take a look at the Ralbag. Let me have Rebecca. Can you read this?
Sure.
One who brings gossip reveals a secret.
Yeah. One who brings gossip reveals a secret. It emerges from the evilness of this trait that he goes about gossiping and causing harm to people by revealing secrets. However, one who is trustworthy conceals and hides the matter, even if he was not explicitly warned that it was a secret.
That's a special guy, a special person, that they treat all your conversations automatically assumed in confidence. Now, most people are nervous about that. If they say, they'll often say to you, Scott, I got to share some information. This is purely confidential. Are we good with that? And then the person says, yeah, we're good. Okay. So most people have to be told that, right, we're about to be involved in the sharing of the secret. A neman ruach, a person who is a trustworthy person, they treat all information as privileged and confidential, and they don't share information. Okay, that's not how they get their sense of self and goodness of telling stories. I mean, part of it is that part of the stress is Eleanor Roosevelt had a great line. She said, "Great minds share ideas. Good minds discuss events, and poor minds discuss people." So most people, you're going out for dinner. What are most people talking about? So the high level person is talking about ideas. A next level person is talking about events, like current events, talking about politics, whatever, this and that. There could be ideas also in that. And lastly, the last guy is talking about other people. Oh, did you hear about Jeff? Did you hear about Susan? You're not going to believe this. Crazy. You know, and so they need material. They're running out of material. So a secret isn't, so that adds the stress. Okay, three scenarios. We got 11 minutes and let's do it. Okay, scenario number one, Nancy Amshier went out with Ted for 10 months. It ended amicably. Jennifer is interested in going out with Ted. Jennifer asked Nancy about Ted. Based on the examples of Michael Scott, Yaakov, and Rivka, what should her considerations be? This happens all the time. Jennifer goes to Nancy. I'm interested in going out with Ted. What's the scoop? What should some of the considerations? Obviously, Nancy went out with him for 10 months. She knows information. Obviously, she obviously decided to pass on the opportunity. So what are some of the considerations about sharing this information?
I mean, if he's a good guy and he's, you know, trying to, you know, follow Torah, and it just maybe it was a personality thing, then that's all she should say.
Yeah.
Like, we just didn't click.
That's it. In other words, she should say, I mean, now, well, let's go through different possibilities. Look, he's a good guy. I dated him for 10 months. A lot of good things. It just the chemistry was not there. But I would, you know, but, you know, I think you should, you know, he's worthwhile to go out with him, and you'll make your own decision. Now, if there is a flag, if there's an issue that is sort of like objective, you know what I'm saying? Jennifer, you going to go out with the guy? Here's a situation. Ted is lovely. He's got a gambling problem. You need to know that. So if there's a Toelis, if there's something, if there's a real and present danger that she needs to know about, then she has to share. Then she is, that's not that she can share it. She must share it. If it's something which is really, really a real.
But if it's something like that, like, shouldn't she have brought that up to like one of the MJE rabbis? If he's an MJEer.
Yeah. So, but I mean, what is the rabbi supposed to do? Make an announcement at shul. We're going to have the winter retreat coming up in February. And by the way, Ted has a gambling problem. You know, please watch out.
But if he has a gambling problem, maybe the rabbis can help him with it.
Okay. Maybe he's being under, you know, so there has to be the, okay. So if there's a present danger, again, I'm not saying that I didn't write all the possibilities of this entire scenario, but if the basic point is, if there's something which is really objective, a problem, there has to be a disclosure. So too with business partners. You know, let's say Nancy and Ted were business partners and they broke up their business partnership because Ted did a little bit of embezzlement. Okay. All right, we're going to go Jessica and Chloe.
Yeah, I think it's about who it's relevant to, right? It's Lashon Hara if you're just spreading it for the sake of people knowing. But if it's relevant to someone who may build a life with someone, I mean, that's the whole purpose of having a reference, right?
Correct. It has to be an objective reason. B, you have to know first, you know, you have to know that it's being true. It can't be just hearsay. It can't be like, yeah, I heard there's some issue. It has to be clear. You have to disclose if it's an objective problem. Okay, Chloe.
So I have a question. You have to disclose if the person comes and asks you about it, or do you, in a case of gambling or even more serious, would Nancy have to volunteer to Jennifer, or does she have to wait for Jennifer to come to her?
Outstanding question. Is it time to leave now? All right. So I know. So it's a good question. So I believe she has, if she sees that Jennifer is going to date Ted, I believe she has an obligation to speak to Ted about an objective problem. What gets to a gray area is, I'll make it where it's a little bit more complicated. Let's say Ted struggles with psychological issues. Very common. You know what I'm saying? That's not so posh. So therefore, like, because again, psychological problems can be managed with proper medication and with therapy. You know what I mean? A person can live a good life. So I don't know if she can, I don't know. I mean, unless he's absolutely psychotic, I'm just saying, but, you know what I'm saying? That's a little bit of a grayer area. And maybe there's a difference between a first date and a, you know, fifth date. There's a whole question about, let's say you have the secret. Let's say you're one person in this relationship. At what point do you have to disclose something that's an issue? You know what I'm saying? In other words, let's say a person struggles with bipolar. Does they have to tell them on the first date? You know, hi, Nancy, I'm Penny. I just want to let you know that I have a diagnosis of bipolar. No, I don't think you have to say it on the first date. There's a whole debate about this, about what point, you know what I mean? If there's a relationship, you don't have to share you don't have to share your diagnosis and what medicines you're taking and what psychiatrist you're visiting on the first date. But, you know, obviously before the chuppah, maybe early on if it gets serious. So this is a whole question. This is a topic in the sheer in its own right. I'm just sharing that the idea of the issue of the, having the issue of to control And to disclose and not to disclose versus close is something that requires in Judaism a lot of thought. And we brought these stories up here. We brought the example of a guy who can't control himself, Michael Scott, versus Rivka and Yaakov, who under a lot of stress still did not share the issues with the people who was not relevant with. Okay, I got 4 minutes left. This is a good one. Dan Emgier is a therapist and sees his client in shul. What does the value expressed in Mishlei demand he act?
Oh, I mean, legally, can he not act? Isn't there like a
How does he act toward, it's not poorly written out. How, when he sees, let's say Stan sees Barry in shul, and he sees Barry on a weekly basis as a therapist, how does he act toward him?
He doesn't acknowledge that Barry wants to.
Yeah, exactly. He's got to be like completely as if there's no relationship, or just, just acting, oh, good Shabbos, how are you? That's it. Nothing revealing that they have a therapist-client relationship, because that would be revealing, a confidence that the therapist has no right to do that. He has to, in other words, he has to be, as Mishlei says, a trustworthy spirit, a naman ruach. He's got, that's an obligation. Truth for me as a rabbi, I walk around with a bag of secrets my whole life. I'm just, you know what I mean? So that's my whole life is just not saying anything. Okay, so that's an obligation. It's a chiyuv. It's a moral responsibility. Therapist has it. Lawyers have that. Everybody has to be. You're in a professional situation. You work for a boss. There are certain conversations you have with your boss that they have information they're sharing with you that they don't want to share to the general public or other employees. I mean, you have to, the key point is you have to work on the mita of being a strong secret keeper. That's the virtue, strong secret keeper. Last thing, and then we're going to go to some of my last minute questions. Sheila MG heard a juicy secret from her friend Janice. The next week, Sheila found herself in a small group sharing news. She felt tremendous pressure to offer something to the conversation. What would most people do? What should she do? In other words, she's sitting around there and everybody's schmoozing, and she feels like, I got to add something to the schmooze over here. I got nothing. It's getting a little awkward. What does the examples of Yaakov and Rivka and Mishlei inform Sheila what she's got to do?
Well, she certainly can't tell the secret just for the sake of telling secret. I think probably under pressure, I would make something up, because I think that's probably better than sharing actual secrets for like someone else for no reason.
Rebecca, absolutely correct. Yes, you got to work out something. You got to either be quiet or not, or turn. Better approach is ask.
About those Mets.
ask the people a question about what's going on in their lives. I mean, because the best conversationalist is when you are a thoughtful listener. So if you can get other people talking about themselves, which people are always interested about themselves, and you're a good listener, people will call that as, Sheila, such a great conversationalist. In reality, Sheila said very few words. She just listened and nodded and was intently listening.
But if everyone's sitting around sharing secrets, isn't it bad, just as bad, well, maybe not just as bad, but to be asking questions about...
So what are you working on? How's work? What's going on with that? This is, they're just sharing news. They're not necessarily, if you have people who are just sitting around sharing Lashon Hara, you excuse yourself and go elsewhere. I mean, if it's a Lashon Hara, it's a gossip party, then you gotta zip out of there as soon as you can.
I mean, so, you could also say something about yourself, right?
Yeah.
That you want to disclose.
Yeah, if it's not, you don't want to say negative information about yourself. You can speak, you don't want to speak Lashon Hara about yourself. That's also not good. But if it's, harmless, nothing, fine. But my point being is that our society is, just to give you a more broader context, is all about revealing of secrets. Like what is TMZ? What is TMZ?
Celebrity news.
Okay, celebrity what? What makes
gossip. Celebrity news? Gossip.
Gossip. Basically secrets. Hey, you want to see a picture of the actress who generally looks amazing, but looks terrible walking out of a Starbucks at 5:30 in the morning, you know, without makeup and seemingly with an additional 10 additional pounds? Would you like to see that? Yes, everybody wants to see that. You know, you want to hear who's having an affair in Hollywood? Yeah, I want to see that. We're in a sharing secret society, which is unfortunately is really the opposite of the virtue that Jesus wants us to be. A society that keeps things secret, which are appropriate to keep secret. There are times you have to reveal secrets. That's healthy for Shalom. One of the highest values in Judaism is peace and harmony between people, in the family, in the community, and ultimately in the world. And one of those things is that you don't reveal secrets for no reason. And we see one of the reasons we have these stories in our Parsha is we see good examples of Yaakov and Rivka of how they related to information that was secret to them. And this thought was shared with me by Rabbi Mann. Some of you have learned with him directly about this. And because it's an area which it's something that applies to every single day. People are sharing information with you, which is privileged every single day, or you feel pressure sometimes to share that information on a regular basis. So it's a very practical thing just to think about, was this information that was shared with me? Was it shared with me in confidence? And if I have no real critical reason to share it, I just got to keep everything a secret. You know what I mean? It's not if it's about somebody's personal life. And if you do that, people want people who are really trustworthy. So you'll get that identity as being, as Mishle says, the ne'eman ruach, the trustworthy person. And it's something which is a virtue which is special, and in our society, I would say rare. So it's something for all of us to aspire to. All right, guys, have a great night. I'll see some of you at MGE tomorrow night. All the best. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.